percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
I guess the name is appropriate. All the weather we're having kind of blends right in. Hi there, and thank you for listening. Wendy's Coffee House. You can check out the blog. I've got a bunch of new stuff up there. Some sci-fi, like all of a sudden sci-fi is hot, popular, cool, wow, and I'm thrilled. So I've just been adding some of these indie little sci-fi shorts that I've discovered on YouTube. There are various channels, but they're really getting into it, and the short ones are so much more fun. In the meantime, the big stuff, the ones that are actually coming on the television, you might be able to watch, the one I like the best. Okay, so I'm going to be picky and say I like one. People of Earth, all right? Just can't help it. That one's so fun because it's got the ET perception and, you know, the experiencers, the whole nine yards. We've all been through it, or at least a lot of us, some of us. I have. And so that is that's very entertaining. And then the Orville is just now coming online, and that's kind of a galaxy. See, to me, people are saying, well, it's like Star Trek, and they're mentioning other shows, Battlestar Galactica. I don't know. But the Galaxy Quest is what I see a bit of that in, and it's got a little humor, which I do like, since the other Star Trek, is it Discovery now? I mean, all of a sudden, we're just getting all sorts of fun sci-fi, really well-developed content, too, because when you're looking at these, they do the CGI, the special effects that make it look like it's on the big screen, and that is just leaps and bounds beyond what we were, when I was a kid, addicted to with, you know, Captain Kirk and the crew and Lost in Space and, you know, the tin cans that ran around and disguised themselves as really cool high-tech something. So there you go. The Orville, I think, is from what I've seen, the first two episodes looking like it's a promising. And then the People of Earth has been, I think it's legit. They've already said they've signed him on for season 3. So there's something to look forward to. In the meantime, The Replicant, yeah, Blade Runner. They've now done 2 previews, getting you all hyped for Blade Runner 2049. And this, whoa, okay? It looks like it's going to be a powerhouse. Between that, and then there's, if you go on the website, I put Tears in the Rain. And this is kind of an homage. Tears in the Rain, it's South Africa, a short film. It's sci-fi, and it's an award winner. When you look at that, it has all the essence of that Blade Runner, that dark feel. And getting into that, we're looking at how, with Apple coming out with a new augmented reality, they're adding into their tech and stuff. This is going to be a whole different world in 5 years. In 5 years, this augmented reality stuff and artificial intelligence, little inklings and hints and nuances are going to be part of our mainstream. And that is just mind-boggling how quickly this is happening. I wanted to talk with I've talked to him before, and my resource for all sorts of odd, unusual, weird, quirky, cool things, Brent Rains. He's been with Alternate Perceptions magazine, started it in various forms back in the 70s. So he's got a wonderful catalog of all sorts of stuff that's happened. And he is on the line with me now. And Alternate Perceptions magazine, you can check it out, apmagazine.info, and find out more about what all he has. But we're going to talk about some of the things that he's done. Brent, I'm so glad you were available today. And your 10-year-old grandson is tagging you somewhere. You said you're taking care of him for a while.
Here in my daughter's trailer next door, which is completely empty, so no background noises to be expected.
Okay, you're doing the alternate location.
Right, alternate location, yes.
Okay. Well, okay, so Brent Rains is the editor of Alternate Perceptions magazine. You started this in the 70s, and then between, you know, the time of starting that, you started researching UFO events. You'd already been into that and met the big names. Travis Walton,
Travis Walton? No. I have a good friend who did an interview with Travis Walton, and we published that a couple of years ago in Alternate Perceptions.
Well, and the one the guy you're working with now with the Spirit Box, which we had some audio of that. He's one of the name guys for contactee.
Right. He's actually one, Brett Oldham. He's a alien abductee. He was into paranormal research previously, and I met him before he actually came out about his alien experiences. But he's had paranormal experiences and UFO alien type stuff going on since childhood, as many of them have. And he introduced myself and Sandy Nichols here in Tennessee, who's also a alien abductee, who's had experiences very similar since childhood. And I'd been interested in, like, EVPs for years and tried them and not really had a whole lot of success. There were, you know, a few things that were kind of anomalous. But after, you know, working with Brett and him showing us how to use the what they call the ghost box, things really took off. And, I was really skeptical. I thought, somebody got a radio somewhere and they're transmitting, you know, on AM frequency. And I was, you know, in fact, my wife and daughter attended a session. I was in another room. I didn't even bother to attend the first one, but they were telling me, hey, you know, we heard these things that we couldn't explain coming through. Mentioned my wife's name and her brother, her deceased brother's name, she said. And so I said, okay, you know, and so started to attend, you know, the next session and then the next and the next. And I was quite skeptical, but then I even got yeah, that didn't last for long. And then I got, you know, a radio from Radio Shack and modified it where the was on a, you know, the continuous run, the where you search for stations and
yes.
You just have where it just goes continuously on scan. And sure enough, we got some very interesting things right from our home here in Waynesboro, Tennessee. You know, we didn't have to be at a haunted location, which we've been to many, and gotten very interesting results. But it's surprising what, you know, you have a tape recorder there, too, recording the session, the things that you can come up with.
Well, part of that, I think, too, is there are people who develop an ear for it. And so they automatically hear something that makes sense to them. And then when they point it out, other people are, well, yeah, that sounds legit. And is that happening with what you're doing?
Yes, because the very first time I attended the session was at a nearly 100-year-old church over in Fayetteville, Tennessee, a very haunted little town. And we were down in the basement, and Brett was there with his ghost box. He preferred to call it spirit box, but anyway, it's generally known as a ghost box. And I listened, and I really didn't hear anything. You know, I heard static and I heard little bits and pieces of radio stations. But then after, you know, attending other sessions, I did begin to hear things. And then one day, 6 months later, I went back and listened to a little segment. I didn't know what this audio was, and I discovered, oh, that's that spirit box we did that first time that I attended over in Fayetteville. And there was a point where it was asking, where Brett was asking for the spirits before they closed to contact my wife's brother, who was named Jesse, who had come through before, it seemed. And so all of a sudden, instead of hearing Jesse, you hear Keel, Johnny. And, you know, I nearly fell out of my chair because during that session, I was, you know, Keel had died months earlier, the year before, July 3rd, and this was March of 2010. I didn't hear it the first time, you know, I completely missed it. I thought it was just, you know, and here was confirmation because I didn't tell anybody in the group that I wanted to contact John Keel.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like you could hear an argument going on between people, and one of them sounded like my wife's deceased brother.
Okay, hang on, Brent. Okay, because we want to play some audio. Okay, so hang in there, and we're going to come back. This is something that I've studied because at one point, like 2009, I went on a ghost hunt, ghost search, ghost, I guess, exploration in Lawrence, the one of the houses there is well known for activity. Anyway, he had all sorts of equipment and tech stuff trying to get the audio to see if we could pick something up, and they did. Anyway, we're going to come back. Brent Rains, who is my guest, and talking about basically transcommunication, the way that we connect with spirits in some way, shape, or form using some kind of electronic means. It's fascinating, and we'll come back with Brent and listen to some of that audio just to give you a clue what you might be hearing here on Wendy's Coffee House. So many things going on here, and sometimes we get caught up in that lockstep, you know, today I have to go to work, tomorrow I have to do this constant thing of what's going on, or, you know, listening to the news. But when you listen and you start paying attention to the things that happen between the cracks, and you stop getting so caught up in the autopilot, other things start to stand out. And talking with Brent Rains about his organization and what he works with, Alternate Perceptions Magazine, and he's been studying all sorts of stuff of weird, unusual, strange, offbeat, odd for years, which is why I like to talk to him, because he's got this big library archive memory of all these kinds of things. But we were talking about the spirit box, and I wanted to just bring up the one that I was familiar with when I started looking into this was a woman who had just started getting into this when she was younger. And she, of course, now I've lost the page. Sarah was her name. And dang it, instrumental transcommunication is what it was called. Here she is, Association for Transcommunication. And she was Sarah Estep, the founder of this organization. And she used an audio tape recorder and would just get sound out of nowhere. And eventually what happened was it started becoming much more legible, audible in so many ways. You could visualize and hear the voice as opposed to just kind of hearing bits and pieces the more she did it. Okay, so how that happened, we don't know. Brent, you have samples of what you pulled from this, from one of your sessions with Brad, and wanted to play that. Which one should we just go ahead and play one and let you just tell us what it is?
Sure. Any of those that I know just a little while ago we were talking and listened to some, and okay. I've got samples, you know, out there, and the February and March issues of my online magazine and my column Reality Check. But yeah, sure, go ahead and you know, play any of them, and I can tell the background story.
Okay, Mark.
Okay, the voice, a lot of times these voices, you know, talk pretty fast. You have to kind of slow them down. But what myself and others were hearing was John Keel, Brent, and then Bert here. And Bert, there was a psychiatrist that had passed back in September 2010 that I'd been in contact with, met, worked on, you know, he gave me, you know, ideas on different cases I was working on. He was very open to the paranormal and UFOs, and Keel knew him also. His name was Dr. Berthold Schwartz, and I often called him Bert. And after he passed away, we were getting Dr. Schwartz, Bert, quite a bit on the recordings. And here was one where we had three names, seemed like, that we were familiar with: John Keel, Brent, and then Bert here.
Go ahead and play another one, Martel. That one. Okay.
Okay, that's the, yeah, John Keel, Brent, Bert here again.
John, can you please tell us, to know now also, what are Bigfoot?
Okay, translation.
Now, that one was July 3rd of 2010. It was the one-year anniversary of Keel's passing. And I asked the group that night, can we go ahead and see if we can contact John Keel, who just by coincidence happened to be doing a spirit box session at the home of Sandy Nichols and Thompson Station up near Nashville. And so they said, sure, great idea. So we got a lot of interactive stuff that night. We did two sessions. And, you know, Keel had written a lot about Bigfoot and other strange monsters, as he called them, from lake monsters, the Loch Ness Monster, and so on, to little people, to Bigfoot, winged creatures like Mothman. He wrote a book back in 1970 called Strange Creatures from Time and Space. And so Brett was, you know, had a Bigfoot sighting himself in Ohio years ago. He was a young man, and so he wanted to see if Keel could tell us anything about Bigfoot. And it sounded like Keel was saying, "Smuck Bigfoot, see?" And then you hear like two other voices say, "See," and then someone else says, "See."
When you talk about the Bigfoot thing, I've had a couple of guests talking about that subject, and I'm going to have another one coming up here shortly. They've made connections between the ET phenomenon and, you know, UFOs, and also transdimensional or other dimensional, extra dimensional, saying that they connect telepathically. Have you had that experience?
There have been a lot of cases where there's been an apparent connection, I think, with UFO type phenomenon and Bigfoot, as well as other monsters, as Keel would say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had Point Pleasant, West Virginia, with the Mothman, and there were other creatures. There was also Bigfoot there, and then there was seeing back during the 70s. I made a point of, I went to different locations. One was in Somerville, New Jersey, just outside New York City, about an hour, and they were having sightings of UFOs and Bigfoot there. And right here in Tennessee, in Flintville, Tennessee, outside of Fayetteville, there's a small, unincorporated town where I met several witnesses there who were seeing this Bigfoot. And one of the witnesses told me that whenever this thing is around, we see this little ball of light, about basketball size, glowing and hovering over the treetops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's when we know creatures around. So yeah, this been you know, and I know one of the witnesses in New Jersey who whose father, I think, was a full-blooded Cherokee, encountered a Bigfoot face to face, and he said suddenly we were like frozen. He said behind the creature was a little pinpoint of light making kind of a high frequency noise, and he said as soon as the light went out and the noise stopped, the creature blinked and went the other way, thank goodness, and he turned around and went the opposite way as well.
It's like close encounter, not anymore.
Right. And I had a friend in Florida who had a close encounter back in 1967. And in fact, she was the one that introduced me to Dr. Schwartz. And she afterwards had poltergeist activity in her home and these beings appearing at night in her bedroom. And her son also had experiences, very frightening to him. And then later, she went over to Brooksville, Florida, on the other coast, because she was at Mayport around Jacksonville first, and Brooksville is over there by on the Gulf Coast. And that little town has had a lot of alien contact events and was known also for its Bigfoot sightings. And so she went over there, and I remember her telling me that, the Bigfoot was different. It was going to be, this was a physical type being, this was the missing link or something. And I said, well, it could be interrelated to the UFOs. No, I've been through that. She said, this is something different, you know. Well, it wasn't long before she said, yeah. And I went over there and she was showing me, you know, places where, while investigating Bigfoot, she had also seen these lights. One came down in front of her car and landed in the road and then bounced back up, a big ball of light. And when they were investigating a ranch where there was Bigfoot sightings, where she also went, staked the place out, and had two sightings of Bigfoot herself, mm-hmm. She also said they were seeing the guy she was with at the time saw this, like a disc, as I recall, with like windows in it, flew overhead.
Okay,
so
yeah. Yeah, that's what I got from Kiwani and Kelly Lapsaritis, was that Kiwani's first sighting was with Bigfoot and an ET. And so top that. But that's something that happened, I think, was it 40 years? He's been doing this studying for 60 years or so. But that's what I've been hearing more and more as I talk to people who had these Sasquatch sightings or, you know, encounters. We're going to we need to take a break. But Brent, I want to come back and talk with you about some of the stuff you've been doing with the contact experience. I think you talked to, is it Dr. Bob Davis, who's with Free Experience, the researchers.
Yes.
who are studying the encounters that people have and how that relates with paranormal and all that good stuff. So we're going to take a quick break and come back with more, getting into more of the ET stuff with Brent Rains here on Wendy's Coffee House. Such a great song. Okay, so we're talking with Brent Rains. And Brent has written for Fate Magazine, Recovery Times, UFO Dynamic. He's the editor of Alternate Perceptions Magazine online, apmagazine.info. You can find it and find out all sorts of wonderful stories of odd, unusual, really reality expanding type material. And we were getting into, I wanted to get into this extraterrestrial ET stuff because the Bigfoot, which I thought was so exciting and I had not heard before, is supposed to be telepathic. And so you can pick this up. And then the more I researched, the more I discovered, well, duh, anybody who deals with this at that level says they are telepathic and they would prefer to be called Sasquatch because that's a little bit more honoring. But they are also multidimensional and they are maybe extra dimensional. And when we were talking with Brent off the air, he said, ultra-dimensional, according to John Keel, or ultra, another universe or a different dimension? How does that work?
Well, Keel, up until 1967, decided that it wasn't necessarily extraterrestrial, that there were distortions in time and space, and that these things were... I know in 1971, as a teenage UFO buff, I was trying to get input, and he suggested I read a book by a George Terrell published back in 1953 called Apparitions. And he thought that a lot of these things were apparitional, visionary, induced memories, all sorts of things that related to the world of the paranormal and religious visionary experiences. And he thought it was like perhaps more like an environmental or parallel world type phenomenon that originated right here. And that we've called them different things down to the ages, elementals, the djinn. He decided to call them ultra-terrestrials, put a little modern twist to it.
And yeah, I think that's a fantastic way of describing it, just from my own experiences, because one minute they're here, the next minute they're not. And things may have changed. There have been some kind of indications that something was happening, and all of a sudden there's nothing to give you any kind of proof if you're trying to show somebody else. It helps to have somebody who's a co-experiencer.
Right, and many times he felt that the appearances that they kind of drew from our own subconscious, our own cultural, personal background experiences, and kind of created things that, in contact situations, that we might be able to better identify with and put a label on it. Not necessarily, that it was exactly what we thought it was, but it would be something that would be maybe more acceptable to our cultural expectations, say.
Yeah. Baby steps, so they wouldn't scare the out of us.
Yeah, maybe something like that. But he felt that, the surface appearances of the situation were often quite deceptive, and that all of this was interrelated to centuries past, fairy lore, Virgin Mary apparitions, all kinds of different things that have happened down through history. And there are a lot of UFO-type phenomena. I've met Reverend Barry Downing, who wrote the book Flying Saucers in the Bible back in the 60s, showing all the similarities, Ezekiel's wheel and so on, to modern UFO descriptions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, when I met him, we were both doing a lecture in Pennsylvania, Scranton, Pennsylvania, at the same university, and we privately met, and there were these two women who had this amazing experience, and they had all this poltergeist stuff going on afterwards, and one of the women had this very vivid dream, vision, whatever, that... where Christ appeared to her, and she said, this being loved me so much, no matter what I had done, it didn't make any difference. What was important was in the now. And the other person was like, it's all evil and everything. So here they had this initial close encounter with a disc-shaped object, and all these things happened, and one believed they were evil, and the other one believed that they were spiritual and uplifting. And yet they incorporated their own base beliefs, I think. And one cultivated, you know, one came out of it feeling it was very spiritual and good, and the other one felt it was dark and evil, you know. And
if you follow Travis Walton, and that's why I brought his name up, because when he first had his experience, he was absolutely frightened out of his mind and thought that, yes, they were, you know, evil, and it was the negative aspect. And then as he trends, and sometimes when you have these experiences, it takes a good 10 years to really integrate it and figure out what the heck happened, because it is unlike anything that you have ever encountered, and being there and experiencing it blows everything else out of the water. So later on, as he started to figure out, you know, they injured him accidentally, and so they were trying to fix what they had created, which was an accident. And that's what he has really come through with recently, that it's that he was too quick to jump the gun and think they were, you know, going to squash him like a bug, and they actually did something wrong and wanted to make sure he was okay. At least that's what I've watched him as he's metamorphosed into a much more, I think, compassionate view of his experience. And that, you know, when we're looking at what our mindset is, if we're automatically afraid of everything, then we produce something that's going to scare us, like the haunted house experience.
Right. I know that a number of people I've talked with, they described how their first experience, they thought they were demons or the devil, you know, because they didn't look human, and they were very scary to look at. And, you know, I was reading recently a blog where it was written by this author that, you know, we think of angels and cherubs like Hallmark variety card, you know, something, you know, very, you know, little Cupid-type beings or a very pleasant to look at human-type figures, and, you know, the kind of blonde-haired, blue-eyed Nordic type or something. But in reality, many of them were quite frightening, and the first thing that the being would say would be not afraid. And, you know, a lot of our alien contacts have that same phrase in them. You know, a being appears to someone and they say, first thing they say is, don't be afraid. We're not going to harm you.
And I had that same thing. First, there was a telepathic thing of, we come in peace. I'm like, well, okay, that's pretty generic. And I hear this telepathic prompt, so I'm like, okay. And then later on, there's this, you know, 2 or 3 days later, a short time passed, and then it was, we don't want to scare you. I'm like, well, you know, I've had some things happen in my life that would be considered pretty frightening and harrowing, so I'm probably okay with that. I don't think I'm going to be afraid. Well, that was wrong, because what happened next was when I did have this encounter. And 3 o'clock in the morning, which is apparently the prime time for all these things, but about 3 o'clock in the morning, from the corner of my room, I hear my name, and it's Winnie. And it's Winnie. It was a mechanical voice. They didn't enunciate. And the minute that audio hit my, you know, physically, when you, there's a resonance that comes with voices, and that absolutely from toe to head, I froze. And I knew in that moment what they were talking about. That's the fight or flight syndrome. And once you get into that, that blocks the ability to be receptive, because you just put the freeze frame on it. And then I knew, oh, and then I heard, you know, this little chuckle. I've told you needed to work on your fear. Oh, well, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'm impressed. But that's it. So, you know, okay, so come back, because I know you had experiences as well. All right. So just, you know, let's just share a little bit. All right. Are you up for that?
Okay. Yeah,
Wait. We're going to take a break. This is a tease. Okay, Brent, don't spill the beans just yet.
Okay.
Okay. Brent Rains, he's going to tell us his experience, because we're not alone here. We're having these. It's just people are afraid to talk about them because it's like, oh, yeah, that's not real. So what? Okay. Just share your experience and then to figure out what happened. Coming up more with Brent Rains on Wendy's Coffee House. Sweet dreams are made of Wendy's Coffee House. You know you've had that feeling. It was so real. And then maybe it wasn't. It was like it was a dream, or it was maybe surreal. But it doesn't go away. And sometimes you even have like a residue, a residual an imprint of some kind that makes it seem like this had to have happened somewhere, someplace, but there's no way of proving it. There's just something in you has changed because of the experience. That's usually the best indicator something happened, because your life changes. You have different perspectives. You have different encounters. You have a different awareness. And so when this happens, for a lot of people, like, it's really the equivalent of an out-of-body experience or a near-death experience. Reality is different, and it's expanded. All of a sudden, things are possible. Brent Raines, I wanted him to share his experience, because when we get into this stuff, we run into a lot of people who are sharing their stories, and, you know, that's the fantastic part of it. You're hearing from other people who have these experiences, too. Alternate Perceptions Magazine, you can check this out. It's been online since 2002. A lot of stories there, but Brent, I wanted you to share up close and personal. You know, you said just recently something happened.
Okay, well, this was actually not necessarily recently. It was actually in 1975. And in May of 75, I was with a youth group, Christian youth group, and I accepted Christ. And I know that there was some that encouraged me, because I had planned for a number of years I was going to, that summer, go across country and interview UFO witnesses and researchers. And now there was a question, well, now that you're a Christian, should you do that? And I said, yeah, I'm still going to do that. So I did. And I know when I came back from that journey, it was like, what did you find out? You know, and I said, well, I met some really, really interesting, good people with amazing stories. And I don't, you know, I couldn't say that what they experienced was demonic, which I think was not what they wanted to hear. And so anyway, I had come back from spending pretty much summer on the road, going from Maine to all the way down to Florida, stopping in Tennessee and Ohio and Pennsylvania, talking with top researchers and meeting many witnesses along the way, being introduced to many people with a wide variety of UFO paranormal contact type encounters. And I was really trying to grapple with all this, wrap my mind around it, and I knew I had a lot of, you know, fear of the unknown and things to work through, but I thought, you know, I was at a point of religious crisis, and personally, and I just thought, God, I'm just going to put this in your hands. You know, if you can show me what I need to understand, some kind of revealing vision. But whatever it is, I don't want to, you know, the fear factor enter into it, because I, since a child, I'd always had a, you know, been kind of scared of the dark. And I knew that, you know, if I'm laying in bed and something happens, you know, I'm liable to. You
know, won't end well. Yeah. Yeah.
Change my drawers afterwards, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway,
been there, yes.
Two nights later, I had really, this was in the fall of 75, I had wasn't even thinking about this, and I had just crawled into bed, and, you know, the light's out, the only light on is the light out in the hallway. My father is in the bathroom making last-minute preparations for his, you know, departure for his bed, and anyway, all of a sudden, I'm aware that I'm walking or floating or whatever. I really can't say that I felt, you know, I assumed I was walking at the time, but I don't remember any physical sensation of walking. But I'm going toward the hallway, the door that leads to the hallway. And then in the middle of the room, I stop. And I have this knowing. I found out later a word that it kind of explains it called translogic, I guess. You know, I thought about that there are things that happen in these experiences that are contrary to your normal way of thinking, and they call it translogic. So I thought, okay, that's cool. Well, I guess there was a number of things in that experience that fit that, whether that's a good description or not. But anyway, I was in some sort of altered state, I guess, altered awareness, whatever you want to call it, and I'm aware that someone's behind me, but, you know, normally when you're aware that someone is holding you back, even though you don't feel a physical hand or whatever, but there's that thought in your head of knowing this, you would turn around and look. But I didn't. I just kept looking toward the doorway. And then right after stopping and still looking focused on only the doorway leading out into the hallway. All of these look like hundreds of marble-sized, clear, translucent, transparent, white, pulsating energy balls started swirling down from the ceiling, and they swirled all the way down by the floor, and then they seemed to be taking the shape of a luminous four-legged animal. And then I just suddenly opened my eyes, and I'm looking up at the ceiling. That or else my eyes were already open, and I was looking at the ceiling. I'm not sure which, but I mean, all of a sudden, next thing I knew, I'm looking up at the ceiling, and I'm thinking, wow, well, that was weird. And like you say, it takes a while to process this. I mean, it's involved years of thinking of different things, and the different times I thought, oh, well, this kind of had this perhaps a lesson for me, and then there's another aspect. This could be also what it meant, you know. So I've been through different scenarios, but all in all, it showed me how quickly something like this can happen, how vivid and real it can be, and being of, you know, having all the earmarks of a physical experience and yet being something else. And I know when I was talking to my psychiatrist friend, you know, he mentioned about late Swiss psychologist Dr. Carl Jung, whose last book was on flying saucers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He was a brilliant, brilliant man who came to us with terms like introvert and extrovert and the whole controversial theory of a collective human unconscious. And anyway, Dr. Swartz mentioned that to Jung, he said that the schizophrenic, his dreams were in the waking state. And he said the thing between mental and physical phenomena is that sometimes these things also interact with the physical environment. And this is the thing that parapsychology is interested in, the psychokinesis, the mind-body connection and all this. And, you know, when he started talking about schizophrenia, I was thinking, wait a minute. You know, I was thinking to myself, wait a minute, doctor, I'm not schizophrenic. But, you know, but that's kind of where he started, you know, with. And then as he went on, you know, he was just expressing that we all use different languages to express and explain different things from our different backgrounds, you know. To a psychic medium, they would be talking about astral energy and all these things. To a scientist like himself, he might invoke words like telekinesis, visionary, as opposed to astral world or whatever, you know.
I think we're making progress. One of the most brilliant minds that we're lucky to spend our time with, right, Roger Penrose, physicist, and he believes that consciousness has some kind of reality awareness. And we're going to have to get out of here. But yeah, so I think math is going to give us some kind of a unified theory that brings spirituality and math and consciousness all together. And your story is one of those things that says, wow. You know, so we got to get out of here. Brent, thank you. Thank you so much for talking with us and the magazine.
Yeah, thank you, Wendy. I appreciate it.
We'll talk again. If you're listening, apmagazine.info, AP Magazine, Alternate Perceptions. And just remember, these are things that we deal with every day in maybe novel ways, and sometimes we overlook them. But if you step back, pay attention, give yourself a second thought, then the world gets much more interesting, much more fantastic, and much more interactive. Okay? Till next time, stay curious.